morning, and welcome to the WINY Talk Show. It's time for you to be heard. The talk show welcomes everyone's calls once per hour. Dial 928-1350 and tell Northeastern Connecticut your story.
Good morning, Northeastern Connecticut, and welcome to the WINY Talk Show. On the second day of April, it's Monday, and we have guests joining us today for a very special event coming up on April 23rd at Quinebaug Valley Community College. Joining us here in studio is John Anderson. John, good morning.
Good morning.
John is a English professor and author at Quinebaug Valley Community College, and joining us on the line is Susan Campbell. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Susan
is a writer and teacher. They are both here to talk to us this morning about this event at QVCC, Jane Doe No More, Sexual Assault Survivors Fighting for Change. So John and Susan, again, thanks for joining us and sharing a little bit more about what this event is on the 23rd. We've been talking now, it's part of our regular discussion about victims of sexual assault and coming forward and Me Too and Time's Up. This event is very timely, and I'd like to learn more about it, and I'd like to share with our listeners what this event on the 23rd is. John, can you tell us a little bit more on what we expect to talk about on the 23rd?
Sure. Thank you, Dave, for having us on. As you said, the title of the event is Jane Doe No More. It's a discussion of sexual assault with strong survivors, featuring Dylan Farrow, Woody Allen's adopted daughter, who has accused him of sexual assault when she was 7 years old. Susan Campbell, of course, who's with us, and Donna Palumbo. And we feel that this is just a critical and urgent conversation right now. And at Quinebaug, we're honored to be able to provide a public forum for that conversation because it reaches into the community.
I think it really affects everybody.
Yes.
It really does.
Absolutely.
How did the event come about? And Susan, jump in whenever you'd like here. But how did it come about? Is it something that's being talked about on campus and you had the opportunity to bring these speakers?
Well, this is really, I think, the first time that we are going to talk about this kind of this issue in public like this. Of course, this things come up in classes and as part of our curriculum. And as I said, is out there in the community. And part of the reason for this, the spirit of it, is to speak out and to raise awareness. Andy Tebow is an investigative journalist. My wife, Denise Abercrombie, who teaches at E.O. Smith High School, we've known him for years. Almost 20 years ago, he was doing some amazing literary programming for young writers. And so we got to know him that way. And he wrote about Dylan Farrow's case and brought some really, really important details that we can talk about to light, I think, to the public's knowledge. And he called me and said that he was working with Susan and Donna and Dylan to start doing these kinds of events and wanted to know if I'd like to be involved. And, of course, I was honored.
Susan, you're going to be sitting on the panel. Can you share with us a little bit about what folks can expect if they come on the 23rd?
Sure. And I just want to echo what John said. I think Andy has worked tirelessly both to put this together and to get the word out.
Absolutely.
I think what we're looking at this particular evening is some honest conversation. And I want to say that as a survivor of childhood sexual assault, that I wouldn't want anyone to feel pressured to tell a story they're not comfortable telling. Those of us who are on the panel are comfortable talking, and with the hope that it will keep the conversation going and perhaps give people I don't want to say the strength, it's not weak not to talk, but the ability to share their stories if that's where they are.
So what will you be sharing? You said that you're going to share a little bit of your story. Can you give us a little bit of an idea on what you're going to be sharing on the 23rd at 6?
Certainly. We've all been encouraged to talk about our specific stories. Mine is that my mother married a pedophile when I was 7. She married him knowing that he had been convicted of that crime in Oklahoma. And when confronted by that by a family member said, well, people can change. And people can change. My stepfather did not. And I lived with childhood sexual abuse until I was 13, at which point he bought me a dozen roses and all I could think of is I'm getting out of here as quickly as possible. My story is, there are no typical stories, but mine fits a certain pattern. I did try to tell a trusted teacher and was sent back to my desk. This was 100 years ago, and people were not talking about this. So I'll be talking a little bit about that and when I decided to actually talk about it in public, which was about 20 years ago, longer.
So, Susan, you've been talking about it, and some of your contemporaries have been talking about it, Donna Palumbo, and of course Dylan Farrow will be here at the event on the 23rd. You've been talking about it. Others have been talking about it, but it's really come out of the shadows since Me Too. Is that an accurate statement?
I think it's been out of the shadows, but I think the Me Too movement has given it a momentum that I would not have expected, which is very gratifying to see that young women and young men are coming forward to tell their stories. And some, it takes some of us a little bit longer. I give them a lot of credit. Once again, we see a movement that's led in large part by younger people. And it's, like I said, it's very gratifying.
What are your goals for the folks that come on the 23rd? What do you want them to walk out of this event knowing or understanding or feeling?
Well, I'm not a therapist, but I would hope that they would at least see that if they live through this as well, that they're not alone, and that they can survive this, and that there is life on the other side, and actually fruitful life. When I was going through the recovery phase where I was remembering all of this, it would wash over me like a wave, and I read a book, and I'm going to get the name wrong. I shouldn't, because it's almost like my Bible. It was a book called Strong at the Broken Places, because my fear was, and I sense that this is the case not just with childhood sexual abuse survivors, but any survivor of sexual misconduct, abuse, assault. I thought I'd never be okay. I'd never be normal. And, you know, that raises a question, who is normal? But after reading this book, I saw that I had coped with it in ways that actually made me very strong. And I would like people in the audience, again, if they've lived through this or they know someone who has, which means that's everybody in the audience, to walk away knowing that things can be okay.
On the 23rd, this is open to the public. Donations are welcome to help support Jane Doe No More. Can you both jump in a little bit? Tell me a little bit about Jane Doe No More. It's an organization that's based in Connecticut, been around for a little while, but I want to give Jane Doe No More some more notoriety here. Tell us what the organization is all about. Susan?
Do you want me?
Sure.
Okay,
can you jump
I'm sorry.
In? Okay.
I feel like I've talked so much. Jane Doe No More is a nonprofit. As you said, it's based in Connecticut. Its mission is, I can talk a little bit about the founder, but Donna Palumbo, founded this to get people to talk and to avoid the re-victimization that happens so often afterwards. And that's not just in the legal system, that's period. Inappropriate questions, things like that. So Jane Doe No More's main push is to help people understand how to respond to sexual assault.
John, tell me. Go ahead, Susan.
No, I'm sorry. With the hope that we can also decrease the incidence of sexual assault radically.
John, on the 23rd, there'll be a panel, but you were telling me off air, and I'd like you to tell us a little bit more. There are going to be other agencies on hand on the 23rd, because
yes.
I would imagine that there are going to be folks that are coming that want to learn more and want to learn what they can do for themselves or their family members, as Susan just said. Tell me a little bit more about the actual event on the 23rd at 6.
Sure. I just want to comment on what, you know, the spirit of what Susan was saying, the inspiring narrative of human resilience, students inspire me constantly with the story of human resilience. And I think at the community college, we're charged with looking at difficult ideas, controversial ideas. We're educating workers and citizens, and it's easy to kind of look away or to duck the controversy. And And we don't want to do that. We want to be living up to our charge with the community. This is a highly charged topic and potentially emotionally triggering because, of course, this is this issue of childhood sexual assault is much more rampant and often pushed underground than many of us would like to admit or believe or even be able to wrap our minds around. Fortunately, I've been able to work with Satina Salce, who's a counselor at Quinebaug Valley Community College. And she sat down with me and brainstormed a number of ideas, and she's just absolutely terrific with our students and with faculty and staff and with the community. And she is going to be on hand. She's a licensed counselor before, during, and after the event, with representatives as well from United Services and the Sexual Assault and Crisis Center of Eastern Connecticut, who have a lot of experience and expertise in this particular issue, because we want to confront it, but we want to do so responsibly and make sure that everyone is supported.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. Susan, stick with us. We'll be back. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the connection with Me Too, and we'll learn a little bit more about that. We'll be back with more right after this.
The 7th annual A Taste for Now returns to Quinebaug Valley Community College on Saturday, April 21st at 6 p.m. A Taste for Now features a carefully selected menu of uncommon beers and wines from Friendly Spirits paired with delectable bites from area restaurants, bakeries, and caterers. For 2018, the event will also include sample cocktails from event sponsor Tito's Handmade Vodka. Tickets are $60 and may be purchased online at nowinmotion.org or at WINY. All proceeds from A Taste for Now benefit Northeast Opportunities for Wellness.
A lot of people still hear robotic surgery and think this. When it's actually this.
It's like a brand new knee.
Oh, my back feels better than ever.
Robotic surgery couldn't be more human, especially in the hands of Wyndham Hospital surgeons, who are using it to reduce pain, complications, and recovery time. To learn how Wyndham Hospital is putting the right technology in the right hands, visit WyndhamHospital.org/robotics.
Are you looking for a job? WINY has the answer. It's called the WINY Help Wanted Exchange. Every day, local employers are searching for potential personnel. Go to WINYradio.com and click on the WINY Help Wanted Exchange for a list of current job postings in our area.
Go see what's going on at WINYradio.com.
Do you have a story to tell? Call the WINY Talk Show now. Our telephone lines are open. Call 928-1350.
Ricky, don't lose that number. It's the only one you own. You might use it if you feel better. When you get
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show, 921, and this morning we are talking about the forum that's being held at Quinebaug Valley Community College on April 23rd at 6 o'clock, QVCC to host discussions on sexual assault with strong survivors fighting for change. The title of the program is Jane Doe No More, Sexual Assault Survivors Fighting for Change, 6 o'clock, open to the public. Free, open to the public, and if you'd like to make a donation to Jane Doe No More as part of your admission, that would be encouraged. We're talking with Susan Campbell, a writer and teacher. Susan is on the panel for this discussion, and John Anderson is here in studio from Quinebaug Valley Community College, English professor and author. Thank you again both for joining us. We talked a little bit about Me Too in our first segment. Tell me a little bit more, Susan, if you can, the connection between what you've been talking about for so long and Me Too. Are they the same? Are they different? And how, if so, how are they connected?
I think they're the same. And I want to say that the Me Too movement actually started 10 or 12 years
right,
ago.
Right, 2006, right?
Yeah, by a Philadelphia activist named Tarana Burke. It was picked up last fall by the actor Alyssa Milano in relation to Harvey Weinstein. And all the abuse that had gone on for decades in Hollywood. I would consider it all one of the same. I don't think we need splinter groups. What we're trying to do is talk about sexual harassment, sexual assault, as perpetrated and kept quiet. So that could be someone like me who was a child as a victim or someone who's older, something in the workplace. I see it all as one and the same.
Okay. John, what about on college campuses? How has Me Too, how has that movement been going on the college campuses? Is it different? Is it the same?
Well, you know, there's the impression in the media, I think, and of course in the age of tweets and instant social media, that this just sort of happened magically and just kind of burst onto the scene. But so I'm glad that you guys are pointing out the history of this has been going on since 2006, and certainly much longer than that. Movements take a long time to build, and they're the cumulative efforts of many, many brave people like Susan and Donna and Dylan. Who face these things not as kind of abstract political issues, but very personal, and I see that definitely happening on college campuses, and that's why, you know, it's important to happen at Quinebaug Valley Community College. You know, we try very hard to make sure that even at this small tucked away community college in the northeastern Connecticut, that we're engaging in these conversations and leading the way where we can. And I agree with Susan that it shouldn't be seen as a splinter group or splinter issue, where we kind of get into, you know, kind of micro identities. And it's something that affects all of us. And, you know, these things happen in a culture, and they happen in a history. So someone like me, who's I'm a heterosexual male who's never experienced a sexual assault personally, it's time for people like me to do a gut check and look at how we are in society. What are our views of women? What are our views of power? And how do we act on those ethics really act on them every day in our lives, in our interactions with people, because it's those conditions that set up, it, maybe not cause, but set up the potential for these tragedies.
Susan, you wrote, "We're at the cusp of a revolution and we need to get ready." Can you expand on that a little bit for us?
I think back 100 years ago, when I wrote about my own situation with the much lamented Northeast Magazine at the Current, I remember writing or thinking that if everybody told their story, just their honest story, the world would flip and it would be a good thing. It would be an honest approach to everything. And I know that sounds really airy-fairy, but if we all told our honest stories and, as John said, had someone to listen and maybe perform that gut check and not feel necessarily like they have to fix it, just listen right now, just listen, and maybe let the people who've lived through this write some policy, you know, or have a say in, as Jane Doe No More, have a say in how society reacts to sexual assault survivors. The world would be a much better place and a much more honest place. So with the Me Too movement and more people coming out and talking about it, I think we are on the cusp of something really awesome in a good way, really incredibly healing and really good for everyone. It's like John said, he hasn't personally been sexually assaulted, but I bet you know someone who has, and maybe they haven't said anything. I bet you know someone who's lived with harassment, and maybe they haven't said anything. Mm-hmm. And once we open the door up to those stories, then we can start the business of fixing things.
So do you foresee a societal change or shift? I guess I see it happening. I see it happening now, but from your perspective, is it happening?
I do see that, and it's weird because I've been in journalism for 100 years and we're supposed to be the most cynical people ever. But I honestly do. I see a sea change. I'm on a college campus, and I hear young people talk, and it's such smart conversation about this and other topics. So I think we are, and we need to be there. I think we are on the verge of a revolution, a big change.
It sounds like some of the conversation, at least, of what's going to happen on the 23rd at Quinebaug Valley Community College at 6, is you're going to be talking about what's next. So to both of you, What is next? Is there a short term, long term? What do you think? Where do you think this whole conversation should go next?
I think one conversation at a time is one way. And, you know, I think that this is going to take a number of different trajectories actually working together. I mean, there are those individual conversations and reflection, and it is time institutionally, too, for institutions to step up and provide forums, provide spaces, both in the curriculum, both what we're doing in the classroom and outside of the classroom. And in the communities. That's our role anyway in moving forward, I think.
Susan, how do you plan to address that on the 23rd as far as what comes next?
Well, I think just as John said, yes, everything. It all comes next.
Right.
Telling the stories, listening to the stories, thinking about the policies that are in place and how they need to be changed, thinking about how curriculum is offered. In high school and middle school, all the way down to grade school, and certainly on college campuses, how can people who know how important this is foster environments that allow these conversations to go on, that remove the stigma, the victimization stigma for people who've lived through this?
We'll take another quick commercial break. Back with more right after this.
My number two does not look like a number two. I don't know what to call it. Is there a number three?
Table for four, please. Anything close to the restroom.
A middle seat with these stomach problems? That's my fear of flying.
Sound like you? If it does, you could be one of the many people with a digestive condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. Even if you don't know what EPI is, you might know the symptoms. Frequent diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain. If you have even just one of these symptoms, you could still have EPI, because not everybody experiences EPI the same way, which is why it's so important to open up to your doctor about all your symptoms. And the good news is, EPI is manageable, so don't keep a lid on it. Go to identifyepi.com, complete the symptom checker, and use it to have a conversation with your doctor. Don't keep a lid on it. Visit identifyepi.com, brought to you by AbbVie.
When it comes to your automotive needs, who do you think of? If King Cadillac GMC, located at 139 Pomfret Street in Putnam, Connecticut, isn't on your list, why not? Hi, this is Angie Viant-Jandro. King Cadillac GMC has been serving the people of northeastern Connecticut and beyond for over 80 years. That should tell you we're doing something right. It all starts with our third-generation owner, Greg King, who instills in his staff the importance of treating every customer who comes in with respect, honesty, and fairness. Whether you need an oil change, parts, or want to buy a brand new Cadillac, GMC, or even a brand new plow, everyone is treated the same, like royalty, and it's been working for over 80 years. So when your next automotive need arises, give King a try and see for yourself why we've been a trusted family-owned dealership for over 80 years.
Get the royal treatment from King Cadillac GMC, 139 Pomfret Street, Putnam. Call 860-928-KING and see them online at kingcad.com.
If backing out of steel stuff.
Hey, honey, could you turn down the TV, please?
What?
I said, could you please turn down the TV?
Just a second while I turn the TV down.
Will you please go see the folks at Amplisound? I hear they have a lab right there where they actually make hearing aids. Because they make them, they offer the best possible value. You can even try them before you buy them.
I'm not old enough to get hearing aids.
Honey, saying what all the time is making you seem old. The new styles are so small, no one will know you're wearing them. I'll call right now, okay?
Okay.
Call Amplisound today at 860-315-9656. With offices in Putnam and Vernon. Hear what life has to say. Amplisound. Great hearing, excellent value, nearly invisible.
I went to warn Joe because I
Honey, it's so nice to watch TV with you now. Thank you, Amplisound.
Amplisound. Great hearing, excellent value, nearly invisible.
It's our game of the week on WINY 1350 AM. Winter sports are over, and now we turn our attention to spring sports as we will open up our softball season on Wednesday at Turtelot Memorial High School when the Turtelot Tigers will be home to host the Montville Indians. Game time is scheduled for 4 o'clock with our broadcast going live around 3:50. High school softball on WINY is brought to you by Busquets Appliance, Girardi Insurance Services, Putnam Pride, Day Kimball Healthcare, and King Cadillac GMC.
Do you have a story to tell? Call the WINY Talk Show now. Our telephone lines are open. Call 928-1350.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words.
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show. It's 932, and we're joined on today's program to start off a Monday talking about a very important forum, an event that's being held at Quinnipiac Valley Community College on the 23rd at 6 o'clock. We're talking about Jane Doe No More, Sexual Assault Survivors Fighting for Change. This forum, it's a panel discussion featuring Dylan Farrow, Susan Campbell, who joins us on the phone. Hi, Susan. And
Hi.
And Donna Palumba. And joining us also in studio is John Anderson, English professor and author from Quinnipiac Valley Community College, who's here to talk to us about this event. Let's lay this out for people that might be thinking about coming. What should they expect for a conversation again, Susan? Tell me a little bit more about what folks should expect when they come on the 23rd.
Well, I think people can expect that the panel members are going to talk a little bit about themselves, but that's not the entire evening. That would not really move the conversation forward. I hope there's going to be some interactive back and forth. We want
yes.
people to feel comfortable. As John said, there's going to be people available there if someone is bothered by the conversation. And I think it will include a what's next, what now.
You're going to be sharing your personal stories, and you're doing that because you like to inspire people. Is that part of it?
That's a really good word, inspire. I'm telling my story because I can. All my instincts as a journalist is to tell the truth.
Right.
And when I realized that I had lived through this, all my therapies, all my readings, all my everything was geared toward, I'm going to tell. First I confronted my perpetrator, and then I wrote a newspaper article about it. And I didn't know what to expect. This was before Facebook and Twitter, so I probably got off easy. But I remember opening something like 700 emails and letters afterwards. And there were two that questioned, in a really respectful way, a couple of things in the story that they didn't understand. I probably could have written it more clearly. But it was overwhelmingly positive and supportive, and that was almost harder to deal with than what I was expecting, which is, you're a liar, this didn't happen. I forgot my train of thought.
Well, you know, I'd like to get into that with you a little bit. You started to share your story before there was really an opportunity to comment on it. Comment, like,
exactly.
Unlike, frown, whatever emoji you want to pick.
Now
does social media make it? When I asked you that question, I used the word inspire because that's what I hear. So-and-so came out with their story that inspired me to tell mine. Mm. But is it harder in the days of social media to share that story?
Absolutely, because any goober covered in Cheetos dust in his mommy's basement is going to comment on you. And it takes a lot of guts to tell these stories. It takes an incredible amount of courage to tell these stories when people can hide behind anonymity. In my case, you know, the emails, people could hide behind emails, but I didn't have to deal with Twitter and Facebook. Again, my hat is off to people who come forward now, because you're taking a huge risk, and I think you need to be in a pretty strong place to do that. When I wrote my story, I don't know that I was in a strong place. I just knew I had to tell.
Okay.
And that got me through anything, any discomfort. You know, I remember thinking, I don't want to become the incest queen. Like, when people look at me, that's all they think. Oh, she lived through incest. Yes, she did. But that's part of it. That's not all of me. And I guess I balk at Inspire because maybe I'm doing this for myself. You know,
okay.
I feel like I need to talk about this. Mm-hmm. I hope it inspires, but I'm at the point, and I was at that point back in the 90s, where I have to tell this story. I don't have to tell it over and over again. I really haven't written about it extensively. The most recent time was in connection to the Me Too movement. And I really hadn't revisited the topic in any deep way since I first wrote about it. But I do think, as I said earlier, those of us who are in a place where we can tell the story should tell the story.
How do you feel about some of the messaging that comes out of Washington and Washington politics, and I'll cut right to the chase, I guess, and go right to the White House, where there's been shaming of victims. When it starts at the top like that, how difficult is it for organizations like Jane Doe No More to share that story and share that mission? Does it make it harder?
Yes, of course it does. And I think that what we see in Donald Trump's Twitter feed, as far as his seeking to shame victims and attacking women in general, is the last gasp of a really bad regime, a really bad idea of how to treat women. And I'm hopeful, and I really do believe that this is what happens when the power is running out and someone gets a little bit desperate and starts name-calling and starts doing exactly what Donald Trump does in his Twitter feed. I don't dismiss it, but it is, you know, the toddler tantrums that come out of Washington, particularly Donald Trump, look to me like desperation.
After the Access Hollywood tape came out, the electorate still stood by and made that decision to elect the president, Mr. Trump president. So where does that take the effort? Jane Doe No More, or just the mission in general to have people come forward and share their stories?
I think it made it more difficult for some, but for people like me, it just enraged and inspired me to push harder. And I think it makes it more difficult to let young people know that it is a safe space. And I've got your back, but I've got your back. And anyone who's paying attention to what's coming out, what was the proclamation Donald Trump signed recently, National Sexual Harassment Assault Recognition Month? Who knows? But the hypocrisy was oozing off of that. And I think as long as there are people who are fact-checking what's coming out of the White House and saying, no, that's not true, then we are creating a space where, no, you can still tell your story. In fact, you should.
What about Congresswoman Esty from here in Connecticut? That has been making headlines over the past few days and escalated a little bit over the weekend as far as calls for her resignation based on how she handled harassment in the workplace and assault in the workplace. Do those sorts of headlines keep the conversation moving? It's similar to the question that I just asked you. Does it keep it moving, or does it force people to say, you know what, maybe I'm just going to keep quiet?
It depends on the person, I think. I know when Senator Looney was calling for her resignation, as was State Senator May Flexer, I think that conversation does have to go on. As we spoke before the show, my discomfort with this is that I appreciate that the Democrats are quick to eat their own, you know, to put people who have done something like this, or in the case of Esty, retained a person on staff for a few months and then signed a non-disclosure agreement. I don't care who pressured you, show some leadership. And in addition, paid the accusee $5,000. I think we do need to examine that. I wish just once that the other party, the other major party, would do the same, as opposed to try to find reasons for why that happened.
Tell me a little bit more about the other folks, John, if you will, that are around this panel. We talked about Andy Thibault. He's going to be moderating this, but you've got some other folks that are coming to the college on the 23rd that are also going to share their stories.
The main event, the main conversation is going to be between Susan and Donna and Dylan. Donna Palumba being the founder of the Jane Doe No More movement here in Connecticut, which is finding so much power now and speaking to so many people. And of course, Dylan Farrow, who quite famously, because of who she is accused, Woody Allen, her stepfather, has garnered a lot of media attention, which in a way has made Dylan that much more courageous in my eyes. I mean, Susan speaks to the difficulty of speaking out in the age of the internet when there are so many people who are cowardly anonymously waiting to pounce. The internet has been a tremendous resource for positive change, but it also, of course, unleashes the trolls and the people who would attack you and do you harm. Andy is going to be moderating the event. He was an investigative journalist who did some really important work, bringing some details to light of Dylan's Dylan's case. And I know Andy well, and I know that he's going to do a good job. And I'm glad that he's involved, because it's important for men to be part of the conversation and show that we are allies and comrade in arms. There's going to be a chance for audience members to submit questions and comments via cards, which will then be afforded to Andy, and he'll make that part of the conversation. Also, I've been working with Satina Salci at the college, who's a licensed counselor who has a lot of experience with this kind of thing, and who is going to bring other licensed practitioners from who have particular expertise in these kinds of issues from United Services and the Eastern Connecticut Sexual Assault and Crisis Center.
Susan, what would you say to folks that are thinking about coming, but maybe they're still feeling a little bit like they're not ready? They're not ready to come and share their story or learn more. They're not ready to discuss things yet.
I would say come when you're ready. I think everybody's, I don't want to call it recovery, everybody's time after something like this happens is different, and people walk back into the light at their own pace and in their own path. I think if someone's on the fence and not sure, that's okay. They don't have to come. If they think they might benefit from it, then they're welcome. But I wouldn't want to push anyone to do
no.
This.
Yeah.
This is just such a tough thing.
Right.
I hope they come.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. And no one who comes is going to be forced to put themselves out there either. So people can feel free to come and just sort of take it in. And Susan makes a great point. I mean,
the 23rd may be a start for someone.
Exactly. And that's part of our goal for the event. I mean, you were asking about what's next. You know, we want this conversation to lead to other conversations. We are going to have resources available, points of contact for people who maybe that night discovered that they're ready to take the next step and have more of a conversation or seek additional support. We want that to happen. That's all explicit and implicit. I think part of what we're trying to do is to show how to have these conversations because we have great
participants. That's an interesting part of it, how to have these conversations.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and with people like Susan and Dylan and Donna and Andy, I think that they're going to be exemplars of how to have these difficult conversations and inquiries.
I need to take another quick commercial break. We'll be back with more of this discussion, more of the talk show, right after this.
My number two does not look like a number two. I don't know what to call it. Is there a number three?
Table for four, please. Anything close to the restroom.
A middle seat with these stomach problems? That's my fear of flying.
Sound like you? If it does, you could be one of the many people with a digestive condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. Even if you don't know what EPI is, you might know the symptoms. Frequent diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain. If you have even just one of these symptoms, you could still have EPI, because not everybody experiences EPI the same way, which is why it's so important to open up to your doctor about all your symptoms. And the good news is, EPI is manageable, so don't keep a lid on it. Go to identifyepi.com, complete the symptom checker, and use it to have a conversation with your doctor. Don't keep a lid on it. Visit identifyepi.com, brought to you by AbbVie.
Jim Pepe of Pomfret talks about his experience with macholitis in Putnam.
My mother-in-law was living independently across the state in Winsted, reached a point where she could not live alone. We couldn't care for her at home, and she needed to go to a place, and macholitis was available, and we found it to be wonderful beyond any of our expectations. One day I'm pushing a wheelchair down a hall away from my mother-in-law's ward, and a housekeeping lady leans her broom against the wall, kneels down in front of her, holds her hand and says, "Magdalena, how are you today?" Wow, I mean, it's common. It's wonderful. Good administration, good medical staff, good family counsel. That makes a place pretty special. I'd recommend this place without reservation.
Quality, excellence, and caring is the promise to you and your family from Matulitis in Putnam. Call 860-963-0245. See them online at matulitisnh.org.
Your friends at Eastern Savings Bank present Panther Pride every Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. on WINY. Listen each week for news and updates from Plainfield High School. We'll talk about the games, the scores, and the athletes at Plainfield High School. Don't miss Panther Pride every Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. on WINY. Powered by your friends at Eastern Savings Bank on Lathrop Road in Plainfield. Or see them online at eastern-savings.com.
As a small business owner, you're juggling it all, including customers' calls from your personal phone. But with Grasshopper, you get a business phone number and a business phone system from our mobile app so you can work smarter, not harder. Grasshopper for its calls, texts, even transcribes voicemails. Everything you need to simplify your business and stay responsive. With Grasshopper, there's no long-term contracts and customer support is 24/7. Whether you're starting or growing your business, Grasshopper is the answer. Now get $20 off your first month when you visit grasshopper.com/radio.
What does your morning sound like?
Morning, Al.
Next stop, 32nd Street.
Welcome to McDonald's.
Hi, can I get an Egg McMuffin, please?
Here's to making your morning routine a little better with a delicious breakfast from McDonald's.
This is Sharon Breer, principal at St. Joseph's School in North Grovenadale, with an invitation for you to attend our open house. We have a special event planned this Wednesday, April 4th, from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. You can meet our faculty and staff, tour the school, and learn about opportunities for your children in grades pre-K through 8. We are a fully accredited school with an affordable tuition rate, and financial aid is available. Don't miss our open house this Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. at St. Joseph's School, 26 Main Street in North Grovenadale.
Jewett City Savings Bank, with offices in Dayville, Brooklyn, Plainfield, Preston, and Jewett City, is proud to present Eagle Edge, a look at sports at Ellis Tech in Danielson. Eagle Edge is heard every Friday morning at 7:25 on WINY, featuring coaches, athletes, and students from Ellis Tech. Eagle Edge, powered by Jewett City Savings Bank, an independent, mutually owned community bank. See them online at jcsbank.com.
Do you have something to say? Pick up the phone and dial the WINY Talk Show now. 928-1350 is the number to call. Our telephone lines are open. 928-1350.
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show. We're joined by Susan Campbell and John Anderson as we talk a little bit about what's happening on April 23rd at 6 o'clock at Quinnipiac Valley Community College. Jane Doe No More, Sexual Assault Survivors Fighting for Change. Susan, When folks come, and John as well, when folks come, do you expect to be talking about, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm interested to ask people how they will go forward, how they will move forward to address power issues at work, let's say. Let's use that one example. Is there going to be some advice that maybe our speakers could share with them on how they rose up to deal with this and how they can work to make things more transparent?
When you were asking this, I thought, are we going to go through the crowd and say, okay, you,
no.
This is your assignment.
No.
I get it. I think so. I think that would be an important part of the evening, is sharing the stories, encouraging other people to share the stories, and now what? So, yes, I can say, at least from my little corner of the woods, definitely.
You talked about what you did as you started to share your story. But for someone that may be concerned about their job, or for that matter, what's happening in their own little family unit, what is the advice to those folks on, now you've told your story, what do I do next?
This is one of those situations where you can't tell someone what to think, but you can help them to learn how to think. So as I said earlier, each person's walk away from this is very individual. So I think a big part of any recovery after childhood sexual abuse is to think about what's right for me. And I completely understand wanting to preserve a family unit. This blew mine up. And I completely understand wanting to maybe not be as forthcoming. And if that's right for that person, then that's right for that person. I think the grace is figuring out what's right for that person. So we can talk that night about how do you figure out what's right for you? And then maybe that wasn't right for you. How do you go back and do what's right for you?
Yeah, I would add to that, you know, listening to Susan and Dylan, the CBS interview with Gail King, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I think one really powerful, important aspect of this, of the speaking out, is that often people who have been victims wonder that question. You know, I survived this sexual assault, but can I survive speaking out about it? My job, my family, et cetera. And people like Susan and Dylan and Donna show us that, yes, you can survive. The other important thing that they show us is that you are not alone. You do not have to do this on your own. There is a community of people, courageous people, who have been through this and who are willing to help you.
Give me the details of the event again, John, if you would. Time, place. It is free for folks, but donations to Jane Doe No More are encouraged.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit more about the details.
Sure. Jane Doe No More, Sexual Assault Survivors Fighting for Change. It's going to feature Dylan, who will speak, Susan and Donna, and then they'll have a conversation, which will be moderated by investigative journalist Andy Tebow, who, as I said, did important work on the Dylan Farrow case early on. It's Monday, April 23rd, 6 p.m., the Robert E. Miller Auditorium. Seating is limited, so we encourage people to come early. It is free of charge. There's no admission fee. We hope to have an overflow space available in the cafeteria. So if all the seats fill up in the auditorium, people will be able to be in the cafeteria and watch it and actually participate because we'll take questions from there as well. And that's the overview. That's the rundown. And I'm very inspired just sitting here having a conversation with Susan today. And I'm really looking forward to the event.
Susan, audience members should be aware of the potential for emotionally difficult content. We're talking about sharing of stories from the three panelists. What should people expect?
Precisely that. I think they should also expect a gentle night. That may sound weird when coupled with emotionally fractured stories, but everyone is there to support everyone. I'm looking forward to hearing the other panelists. I think I'll learn from this, and I think everybody who comes to this event, if they come with that attitude, then they'll leave with more than what they arrived with.
Great. Susan, John, thank you so much for joining us in this hour. An important discussion to have. The event is April 23rd at 6 o'clock at QVCC. And if you're interested in coming, we encourage you to get there early, get a good seat, and be prepared to have an important discussion.
Thank you.
It's a discussion, an important discussion. So thank you both for putting this on. Thanks to Andy. We appreciate both of you being on the show, and we wish you the best of luck on the 23rd for a great event. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.